Have you considered how your company's digital transformation plans might also increase its cyber risk? If not, you might want to join the Security Ledger and RSA Security on May 9th at 11 a.m. for Taking On Digital Transformation. In this webinar, I'll talk with RSA portfolio strategist Steve Schlarman about how IT leaders and executives at cutting-edge firms are addressing digital risk management as part of their overall digital transformation strategies. To learn more or register, point your browser to securityledger.com/risk. This is the Security Ledger Podcast, and I'm Paul Roberts, Editor-in-Chief at the Security Ledger. In this week's podcast, episode number 142, we continue our series on Life After Passwords, the future of online identity, as we are joined by Ophir Gaatan, the CEO of Dust Identity. When the news outlet Bloomberg reported late last year that Supermicro, a U.S.-based maker of server motherboards, was the victim of a hack, it sent the technology and national security sectors into a frenzy. The story was strenuously denied by both the company and its customers, including Amazon and Apple Computer. Still, in the intervening months, Bloomberg's reporters and editors have stuck by their initial story, and the issue has largely fallen from the headlines. Malicious or compromised hardware components integrated into sensitive equipment has long been the domain of ultra-sophisticated nation-state intelligence operations, but these days the list of culprits is much longer and could include not just nation-states, but cybercriminal groups, disgruntled employees, or competitors. And our ability to monitor and secure complex supply chains continues to lag. That's mostly because it's difficult to establish and track identities across a vast population of mechanical and electronic components. Our guest this week thinks that his company has a solution to the problem. Ophir Gaatan is the CEO of Dust Identity. It's a startup that emerged from the Department of Defense's DARPA program with a way to use diamond dust to create immutable identities for a wide range of commercial and industrial applications. Establishing a strong, trusted physical identity is the critical element that underlies a wide range of modern problems related to both identity and security, Gaatan tells me in this interview. Dust Identity just emerged from stealth mode in November with a $2.3 million investment from the firm Kleiner Perkins. In this conversation, I start by asking Ophir to describe where he got the idea to use diamond dust as a way to forge a strong identity.
So my name is Ophir Gaatan. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Dust Identity. So Dust Identity was actually formed at MIT, and what we do is that we put diamonds on physical objects to give them a unique identity. So you can think of it as a spray-on barcode that is ultra-secure.
And that dust in your title is actually an acronym, Diamond Unclonable Security Tag. Talk about that.
Yeah, so DUST, as you mentioned, the Diamond Unclonable Security Tag, is effectively the way that we're creating those unique identities for any physical objects, irrespective of their functionality. If you take the perspective of the asset owner, those that have very complex supply chains that propagate into them, the parts that go into those very expensive assets, they need to be able to have the ability to recognize objects. And DUST, the Diamond Unclonable Security Tags, actually allows us to put thousands or millions of diamonds, very small diamonds, at a very small footprint on products, and from that point on to be able to identify them by creating that fingerprint. We scanned the fingerprint using dedicated hardware that allows us to actually operate in a very similar way to how credit cards are processed. So every identification is effectively a credit card transaction, and we can tap or link data to that transaction and basically build the provenance of every component, every object that move in the supply chain.
It's funny because I often start off my interviews by telling my guests, like, oh, give us the elevator pitch on your company. And then typically they give you like a 5-minute answer or something like that. And you're like, okay, that. But you're one of the few guests who actually gave me an elevator pitch. Like that was your initial answer was succinct enough that it actually could have been an elevator ride.
Well, thank you. I actually thought that it was not capturing the whole thing, but I stopped. That's typically what the elevator pitch is supposed to do, right?
How did this project come about, and what is your background? I'm guessing you probably didn't start off in gemology. So what? how did Dust Identity come about?
Yeah, so my technical background, I have a PhD in applied physics, and I'm coming from more from the material side. So during my doctorate work at Columbia University, I worked on Diamond for quantum applications, and this is how I met the two other co-founders, Dirk England, who is a professor at MIT, and Jonathan Hodges, who are VP of engineering. We're all coming with a relatively similar background. We're all with a physics background, and we were passionate about realizing quantum computers and quantum sensors using diamonds. And after a bit of explorations inside the university setting, we realized that there's a lot of potential if we can develop the necessary technologies to commercialize some of those applications. And for that, we needed to solve three fundamental things from a technology point of view, irrespective of what the application is. And that's to know how to make diamonds at scale, to develop hardware that can operate autonomously in the field. So you don't need to have a very expensive hardware in order to communicate or to scan those diamonds. And then developing the software that is necessary such that any operator anywhere in the world would be able to extract the value from the diamonds. Maybe I should point out that at that point, DARPA, the Department of Defense Research Agency, really liked that concept. And I think because of certain applications in the quantum space, they funded us.
What were the quantum applications of the work that you were doing?
Yeah. So at the beginning, I think that we definitely understood that there's a wide range of applications that diamonds might be useful for. The first application for us was something that we were really passionate about, is actually putting diamonds inside the brain on the cortex, so the top layer of the brain, to be able to pick up signal from individual neurons. So the ability to recognize very small magnetic fields, very small nuances in activation of different cells in the brain, and being able to record that in parallel over a wide field, that actually has a lot of applications in neuroscience. Being able to understand the behavior of the human brain at scales that time scales and lateral scales that has not been done before. Diamonds seem to be a very good candidate to be able to have those single neuron sensors capabilities. And when we started to work on those very aggressive technology requirements, we reached a point where we realized that, you know, maybe the brain is not the only place that we can go. And at that point, DARPA put us in front of supply chain security challenges.
Benefit, of course, is that you don't actually need to drill into people's skulls in order to deploy your technology.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's an advantage.
That is really fascinating. That is really fascinating. And I'm not sure I actually knew about the biomedical applications as well. Just to be clear, the diamonds that you use are not, so these are not just commodity industrial diamonds that would coat a drill bit or a sander or something like that. You're actually manufacturing these specifically for use with your technology.
So we are tapping into part of the supply chains that are used for diamonds that are on drill bits, but we're capturing diamonds that have a specific range of impurities. So we need a specific quality to start with. And then we developed a process that is a complex process, but highly scalable, that allows us to actually make the quantum diamonds that we need for the dust application.
With Dust Identity, I think one of the interesting notions here, of course, that might surprise some people is that there is diamond waste out there. And I'm guessing this isn't spurned lovers grinding down their engagement rings after the relationship falls through.
Yeah, so we're actually using synthetic diamonds, but when people think of the diamond industry, they typically think of those very nice-looking pieces of carbon rocks people call diamonds. But in fact, most of the diamonds that are being produced or being mined in the world are used for abrasives. And it's those more industrial diamonds that have the capabilities to host the material that the defects that we need to be able to have.
Talk about how these diamonds are actually used to create a unique tag and how your company synthesizes that.
Yeah. So what we do is that we start with diamonds that have a certain concentration of dopants. So if you think of diamond as a carbon lattice, which it is, inside the carbon lattice, there's a possibility to put in some impurities, some elements that are not carbon, like nitrogen, silicon, and others. And what we do is that we install an atomic defect that is made out of nitrogen and has a vacancy next to it. And that atomic defect creates effectively, you can think of it as almost like a three-dimensional compass that is well aligned with the crystal of the diamond. And the technology that we developed is actually allowing us to be able to record and analyze that orientation of that little compass inside the diamond, and therefore discern what is the crystallographic orientation of that crystal.
That is really fascinating. So can the identity work at the level of a single diamond crystal, or is it the sum of hundreds or thousands of them?
Yeah. So in a sense, having one diamond is not sufficient from a security standpoint. So the ability to actually position even a 10 nanometer diamond, there are technologies that will allow us to put that specific diamond in an arbitrary orientation. But if you have multiple diamonds that are coupled using some kind of a polymer matrix, so our diamonds are embedded inside a piece of plastic, once you have more than one diamond, maybe three or four, it becomes an unsolved problem. Because as you try to move one diamond, you're going to impact the orientation and position of adjacent diamonds, and therefore the fingerprint is going to start falling apart.
And obviously, as you scale up to tens or hundreds or thousands of diamonds, that fingerprint becomes more certain.
Yes. Yeah, so we typically spray thousands of diamonds on an object. We use at least 400 diamonds per fingerprint, and the serialization space for that is enormous. And you know, even with 10 diamonds on a 10x10 discretization space, we can create unique numbers that are, I think, 10 to the power of 230 different permutations.
Where is this identity applied in the manufacturing process or after? And how are these created? Is this something that Dust Identity does, or can you enable a customer, let's say a component manufacturer, to do it on their own?
Yes. Yeah, so we designed a solution such that it doesn't necessarily have to be applied at a specific place in the manufacturing or a specific place in the supply chain overall. We took the approach of the asset owners, and what we understood is that they need to be able to create those identities at different stages, depending on the requirements at that specific time in their supply chain. So dust, the way that dust can be applied is by spray coating the objects, and that can be done in manufacturing. It can be done on existing inventory in your distribution channels. It can even be done in the field. And yes, the intent is for the customer organization to be able to apply dust by themselves. What's important maybe to mention is that until you put the dust on objects, there's no identity to be consumed or to be replicated. We don't create batch level identity. Our diamonds doesn't have a secret signature. So when I try to ship you a bottle with our diamond dust, there's no concern of that bottle disappearing by FedEx.
In transit.
In transit. Right. Exactly.
The reason I wanted to have you on is that, you know, this solution you're talking about, this technology, really addresses a huge, opportunity or unfulfilled need, which is for security down the supply chains. We're hearing more and more about both software and hardware-based supply chain compromises. It's clear that sophisticated adversaries are looking to infiltrate these supply chains. As you guys looked at the market, what are the existent solutions around supply chain security? Kind of who are your competitors and what competing technologies are you squared up against?
Our primary focus in the beginning was around protecting defense platforms, really ensuring the integrity of systems that are used by the Department of Defense or the U.S. government, and really understand how nation state actors and other adversaries might try to penetrate into those supply chains using hardware vectors. And what we see in the last 18 months or a little bit more than that is that the commercial market is starting to get similar concerns. And there's some evidence about certain attacks that occurred in the past. And the primary concern that hasn't been really solved until very recently, at least as far as we can tell, is the ability to actually recognize components as they're being put together on circuit boards. So actually, it's the beginning of the life of devices before there is a unique device identifier that can be consumed during operation. So if you think of a piece of hardware that moves in the supply chain, you don't necessarily, even if you had a unique device identifier, UDIs, you don't necessarily want all the stakeholders to consume it. So from a landscape point of view, or from the competitor landscape point of view, we don't really see a lot of competition on being able to address the concerns that we're addressing. What we see is that there are complementary solutions that's supposed to really enhance the security capabilities after the device is in operation. You know, a lot of people talk about, why don't we use RFIDs or encrypted RFIDs? And the main challenge for that is actually the price. RFIDs tend to be too expensive and too large, and most of the time not secure enough to be deployed in those scenarios.
So one of the prominent examples of this risk is the story that was reported by Bloomberg late last year regarding an alleged compromise of the motherboard maker Supermicro. And this, again, allegedly involved the implanting of a compromised component, very tiny component, on one of these fairly large, complex Supermicro motherboards that then went into, the servers that power, cloud infrastructure and so on. Is that a problem that a company like DustID would address directly? And if so, how? You're talking about a tiny little component among thousands on a motherboard. How do you vouch for the integrity of each of those tiny little components?
So actually, when we started to work on Dust 2.5 years ago, we were still under a DARPA program. The subject of being able to create a unique identity for very small components and being able to verify those components after they're being assembled in circuit boards was definitely one of the use cases that we thought that we should be able to address. And yes, we are able to create unique identities on those components. So basically, what we're trying to solve, and without going into the details of that story, there are certain things that can be done in order to improve the supply chain around the contract manufacturing stakeholders. Mm-hmm. One of them is the ability to ensure that the components that you're getting are actually sourced from the authorized distributor. So there is a way for you to actually know where the components are coming from using our technology. And this hasn't been successfully done at scale in the past. But the most important thing is actually the ability to create a very transparent way to drive accountability in the supply chain. So once there is that ability to create identities and to be able to dust objects and components, you effectively allow for different stakeholders to communicate that they're accountable for objects that they produced. One of the challenges in many cases when you have vulnerabilities in the supply chain is that different actors can claim that they may not have access to a specific object that was tampered, or there was a gap, or somebody else was trying to insert a tampered device after the manufacturing. Here, there is a way for us to actually help with the customer organization and the good actors in the supply chain to better communicate that they stand behind what they made, and that there is a way for them to verify that all the stakeholders that worked on the same component or the same object before had access and they signed off on the integrity of those systems.
DustID, identity is a big part of what you're offering. I guess walk us through how that unique identity is created and then managed or I guess federated out to the downstream customers, the manufacturer, and then I guess the manufacturer's customers.
I think that maybe I should start by pointing out that at the beginning of our journey, when we were first introduced to the those challenges in supply in secure supply chains, what we, you know, it took us a little bit of time to really boil it down to what is the critical element that has to be solved. And if you solve it, other things are going to be much, much easier. And that's the trusted physical identity, the ability to really, when you're holding something in your hand, be able to associate data in a trusted way to that object. Because everything that we know about objects exists in the data side, in the digital domain. And there's sometimes a label, there's sometimes some kind of a tag, but it doesn't tell us a lot. And if we cannot trust that tag, if we cannot trust that link between the physical objects to its data, we cannot trust the data, or we cannot trust the object. So it's that anchoring, that link, that secure link between the data and the object that is the most critical element, at least in our view. And that's effectively what DUS is. The marking allow us to anchor data on top of the identity that is associated with that object. So the way that we operate is that you can think of it as identity management for physical objects, where we separate the authenticator, that authority that will allow us to verify the identity of different objects, from the specific scanning hardware or the location of those stakeholders that need to be able to consume those identities. This was done from a security standpoint because you not necessarily need to be able to scan necessarily only in a secure environment. You need to have scanners and you need to have that capability to authenticate things out in the wild. But you still want to be able to have as much safeguards around the authenticator or authentication authority, where we don't make the assumption that that authentication authority has to be centralized. It can be distributed. We can allow for different entities within the supply chain to act as authenticators if it's necessary. So if you think of a supply chain, don't think of a single place that you do the authentication. You can actually allow for stakeholders to move the authentication into their supply chain if they cannot allow for others, external parties, to view into their part of the supply.
Are there companies using this technology now? And if so, what are some of the use cases that have come up?
This is a very sensitive subject. Supply chain security, most of the stakeholders that we're in conversations and dealing with today are extremely sensitive about what's happening and what information is exposed about their supply chain. So we typically have to operate with a bit more precision and be a bit more discreet than we would prefer. But I think that we understand the context here. In terms of the use cases, we are actually bombarded with a bunch of use cases that are coming from very different industries. This is not simply just a security concern. There's also a quality concern. So the reliability of systems is impacted by not being able to recognize a part. So if you have a bad part, that can impact your uptime. And because of that, we see use cases that are outside of the security realm. Within the security use cases, we have typically three very common types. Use cases that revolve around contract manufacturing and the manufacturing of devices in general. So the ability to recognize components as they go on the boards, making sure that those boards have the right signature, making sure that there is a way to link the UDIs to a specific object such that it can be identified. Then there are use cases that are revolving around the logistics, you know, being able to detect if somebody opened a package, if this is in fact the same package that you sent, if there's any kind of tamper measures, can we make sure that those tamper measures, tamper evident measures are serialized? And this is something that we do very often. And then there is the in the field or the operation side, where it's necessary to be able to identify if a device has been tampered. So imagine that you put dust on a screw. If somebody tries to open the screw and effectively open the device, we can alert the stakeholder that somebody tried to tamper with the device. So what we see is that within the security side, we really need to be able to capture the full life cycle of devices from the birth, from the point of origin where those components are made. So manufacturing, distribution, and then the field service operation.
This is a cybersecurity podcast. So obviously we're very focused on technology, but I would imagine there are many other use cases that don't have anything to do with technology, from knockoffs and counterfeits to, even food supply chain.
Yes, we've been getting a lot of interest from oil and gas, food, pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. Medical devices that are still part of the security side. The automotive industry, again, from the security, art and collectibles, we get a ton of those. In many cases, and we see sort of like two sides to entities that are approaching us. One of them has to do with blockchains. There are a lot of companies that mm-hmm. are talking about the use of blockchains to maintain the integrity of the supply chain or to be able to have recorded provenance of objects. We see it in the art world a lot. And what we found out that there's essentially a missing link there. It's the ability to anchor the blockchain onto the objects or to associate those objects with specific blockchain. Without that anchor, we have a bit of a concern about what type of data is being inserted into those blockchain.
We mentioned the Bloomberg story on Supermicro. Obviously when that happened, there were some very strenuous denials from companies like Apple that anything like what was alleged in the story took place. And I think within the security community, the sense was, well, even if it didn't take place, it could have taken place. But I think for the public, there was uncertainty. Is this a real threat? Is this a, something that is an exaggeration or even a fabrication of something? But you're talking to a lot of companies, so I guess you'd be a good person to ask, is the threat, again, putting the Bloomberg story aside, but the type of scenario sketched out there, a real one that companies are encountering right now in this very integrated global market for parts and software and everything else?
I think that the answer is, generally speaking, without going into specific stories, the answer is yes. I think that in today's environment, the most secure supply chains and the most secure where companies are taking active measures today in order to enhance their supply chains. And I think that if that is probably a good indication to the level of concern that exists, that until I would say a few years ago was strictly or almost entirely consumed by defense contractors. Today, I think that the commercial mm-hmm. market, especially around hardware, there is a growing concern, and those concerns are typically not without any evidence. There's typically indications of specific threats that those organizations need to deal with.
Dust ID received $2.3 million in seed funding from Kleiner Perkins back in November. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So what are the plans for your company moving forward? What should we expect to see or hear from you in the future?
Yeah, so I should point out that before we came out of stealth with the seed announcement that was supported by Kleiner, we were funded by a DARPA program. And a lot of the technology development was done previously to that moment of coming out of stealth. And the reason that we came out of stealth is because we understood that in order to have a better access to the commercial market, to just better have better engagement on the commercial side with more actors, people need to know that we exist. I think that one of the things that many CIO and CSOs in on the commercial side had the assumption is that there are no solutions for the hardware security challenges. And what we wanted to make sure is that people understand there is awareness about our solution outside of the the DoD space, because we think that it could be quite effective in those scenarios. In fact, what we believe is that in order to address the need of the secure part of supply chains, we need to actually go beyond that secure perimeter. We need to be able to work with actors that are commercial actors, operate at very large scales, that are global, in order to ensure the integrity of hardware. We cannot operate strictly in the US. We have to operate globally. And I hope that you will be able to see in the next 18 months is our ability to actually operate at a much larger scale, where some of the engagements that we're currently in are going to become public. I highly encourage companies that are concerned about security in their supply chain to really take a good look about how they're dealing with the hardware side. What are the tools that they're currently using? And really reach out to the right entities in order to make sure that they have good understanding of how their suppliers are dealing with hardware security concerns.
Ophir Gaetan of Dust Identity, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us on the Security Ledger podcast.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Ophir Gaetan is the CEO of Dust Identity. He was here talking to me as part of our series, Life After Passwords, The Future of Online Identity.